scores! Gilmore scores! The ball, three left!
Off the glass, it left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla to the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by all Aguilla. Three rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
It is a Thursday, February 27th, and we are underway this hour on Flames Talk with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. It's Pat Steinberg on the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockAndSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution. Thanks for being with us this hour. It is, of course, a Thursday, which means our weekly check-in with our goaltending expert. It's time to check in with Kevin Woodley from In Goal Magazine and NHL.com in Vancouver. He joined us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline right now. Hello, Mr. Woodley. How are you?
I'm good. Nice to be back in the swing of things with lots of games every night, as much as I enjoyed the Four Nations quote-unquote break and the level of play. It's nice to have a little more steady diet of play.
It is good to have regular games back. It's nice to be able to channel surf again on a Thursday, on a Friday, whatever the case may be. Here in Calgary, the Flames are at the beginning. They're one game into a monster six-game road trip, and they started off with a nice win over Washington on Tuesday, and a bit of a surprise in this market, I won't lie. I would say that 100% of Flames fans were surprised when they decided to go Dan Vladar in net against the Capitals, and he proved the Flames right for their confidence. Went out there, made 26 on 27, and after going the longest time without a win, Dan Vladar now has pretty quality starts and victories in his last two starts, both in the month of February. I'm just curious in terms of like what the tape and or the numbers are telling you about Dan Vladar's game over the last couple of starts or so.
Well, I mean, I think the biggest thing against Washington, well, A, it was a pretty good defensive effort. He still outperformed it. None of the five high danger chances. And hey, listen, against the Caps, that's a pretty good number to only give up five, but none of them go in, right? The Ovechkin one, obviously, it's one of those tough ones. It's Ovi, and I think he surprised everyone from shooting that from where he did. Dan doesn't have a chance to move to it, doesn't square to it. It's probably more worried about being a pass to the guy wide open at the net front, and so flattens out and gets caught by it, and it's Ovechkin, and he hits a rocket. So he doesn't need the big windup to hit it hard. So that's one where you just sort of tip your cap, learn a lesson. But when it came to the tough chances, he was perfect. So I think what that does is it helps you moving forward in terms of not worrying about playing him and sort of, this is going to be a busy stretch of hockey for everyone. And the more rest you get your number ones, the more balanced you can sort of have this workload. And the Caps would be exhibit A, right? With the way they've managed Logan Thompson and Charlie Lindgren, the better off both guys are for it. And so Dan did, we kind of saw this in Vancouver this week where the Canucks, because they had lost faith in Artur Shelov's, we're talking about potentially playing Kevin Lankinen in back-to-back games coming out of the break, and ultimately couldn't because of the amount of shots that Lankinen faced in the opening night against Vegas, and then the importance of that start for Artur Shelov in the second game. They end up losing, but not because of him. And as a matter of fact, they were in the game because of him.
Right.
And how important that is in Vancouver, that you're not going to play the wheels off Lankin. And so anytime you get those types of minutes, especially from a guy like Vladar who hasn't played often, like that's just a huge win for everyone, for his confidence, for the confidence the team has in him, and for the ability to not ride the other guy too hard, especially that pressure is inevitably going to mount to make those decisions if they stay in this race down the stretch. And it's important to have faith in the other guy so you don't get tempted to overplay a really young goalie in Dustin Wolf. And like I said, same thing here in Vancouver. Lankinen's numbers have only fallen off when he's been overplayed, and so important to get quality starts out of the other guy for both these teams, and they both did this week.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up, Kev, because we had the conversation coming out of the break. We're like, okay, like what is a What is a realistic number of games for a guy like Wolf to play? Like, are we talking about a situation at the time there were 27 games to go? Or like, are we talking about 22 out of 27 games for Wolf? And now all of a sudden they start Vladar in the second game back. He rewards them with a win. And we were talking about this on Wednesday's show. Like, if it doesn't have to be 22 of 27, if you can cut that number down for Wolf and still get quality starts from Vladar, as much as everybody in this market wants to see Dustin Wolf, the ideal is not running him into the ground, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially because this is all new, right? Yes, again, he's played starter minutes in the American Hockey League, but we've talked about that before. It's predominantly a weekend play league, right? So you've got all week to recover. There is nothing quite like the grind of an NHL schedule, especially one that's somewhat condensed because of the Four Nations break. Like, it's more condensed now. The intensity ramps up. The pressure ramps up. For the most part, defensive play tends to ramp up, but that works both ways. Like, it should help you in terms of, especially if your team is paying attention to those details, more so now down the stretch, but it also means you're usually working with less margin for error, right? Tighter games at the other end of the ice. Like, this is the time of year where teams tend to tighten up, and that's a two-sided coin for goaltenders, right? Because positive for me, but it means I don't have room for a mistake because it's going to be that much harder, especially we've talked about the Flames' offensive struggles for that group. When you know that one or two might be one or two too many to give up in a night, it's a tough way to play. So anytime you can find nights where that mental and physical pressure and stress and wear and tear is reduced with a night off, I think that's a good thing. And, you know, to me, I look at it in an ideal world, it's probably two out of every three, which is 18 starts out of 27. If you got to push it to three out of every four, you're at 20. So ultimately, Vladar's ability to continue playing well will probably play a huge role in this. Yeah. And it'll be important to sort of find that balance. At the end of the day, we don't know where it ultimately winds up because it'll depend on the performance of both guys. As always, it's a performance-driven league, but more starts like this for Dan Vladar are certainly going to make those decisions a lot easier down the stretch.
You know, it's interesting you bring that up, Kev, about the pressure side of it and not feeling like you need to be perfect on every single night. That's what somebody told me when we were talking on Tuesday and the decision was made to go with Vladar. And again, like, I think 100% of Flames fans were surprised by it, but, you know, this person told me basically that, you know, by doing this, and if he wins and plays well, all of a sudden, I think it does take a little bit of the pressure off of Wolf as well, that it doesn't feel like every night the weight of the team is only on his shoulders. And I hadn't thought about it that way. So it's interesting that you bring that up too, Kev.
Well, and I think it's such a unique circumstance to come back out of the break like that. And I honestly, I hadn't thought about it. In terms of, you know, the shift, the pressure, the time off, the physical toll of the time off, like ramping up after not being on the ice for a significant period of time, even though they had the practices while everybody else was at the Four Nations wrapping up the tournament. It's different. It's just different. And I think making sure you get both guys in early, allow Vladar to build off the momentum of his, you know, last start prior to the Four Nations break. Like, it just, I can see, I fully understand, and probably would have raised an eyebrow myself just because of how good Wolf has been, but it makes so much sense that they gave him this start and didn't make him sit on that performance any longer than he had to. It just makes sense from a lot of different reasons, and good for him. He rewarded them. He made them look like it was the right decision, and that's going to earn him more starts. Again, there's pressure on him too. I talked about it with Shelovs here, right? Like, by the time they sent him to the American Hockey League, you know, sort of mid-December as Demko was coming back, like, he had become almost unplayable for Vancouver. He had an .847 save percentage. Confidence was clearly lagging, and the confidence the team had in him was lagging. So for him to come in and have that performance he did this week in Utah was so important, not just for his sort of status, and he'll probably get another start tonight in Anaheim, although we're waiting for that confirmation, but for the Canucks not to play the wheels off of Kevin Lankinen in this playoff race. So, you know, again, for both guys, really important starts on a number of levels. And here's what I love about the decision is it seems like that was always the way they were going to do it in Calgary. I'll be honest, like I was ready to roast them here in Vancouver if they'd gone to Lankinen in back-to-back games, because to me that was absurd, given what we've seen of the performance when the starts pile up. So kudos to Calgary for that being the plan all along, as opposed to, hey, if we can run this guy out on back-to-back nights because the first night isn't too busy, we're going to consider it.
We're chatting with Kevin Woodley. He is our goaltending expert. He joins us from In Goal Magazine and NHL.com every Thursday here on Flames Talk. It's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers on this Thursday, Vix.
Kev, we're obviously in Calgary. You're in Vancouver. We've referenced the playoff race a couple of times now. So with that in mind, how big or how important was that 3-2 overtime win against the Los Angeles Kings on Wednesday night? Knowing the Flames and the Canucks have flip-flopped that second wild card spot a few times already coming out of that Four Nations break.
I think it probably takes a little pressure off, especially, like, even if they'd gotten a single point, I think that would have felt like a huge loss because they had a 2-0 lead in the third period. They have been a lot better defensively here. I'd be honest with you guys, like, I kind of like their game. I know Flames fans maybe don't want to hear that out of Vancouver. It ain't sexy. As a matter of fact, it's cure for insomnia on a lot of nights. Might have dozed off on the couch myself. Kings and Canucks is not scintillating offensive hockey right now. But they'd really tighten things up and they were playing more connected game here in Vancouver. I'd say for like 10 games heading into the break, and they had points in six of, or points in seven of eight, won six of eight heading into the break because of it. They looked a lot more style wise, like the Canucks that we saw last year. You know, really good, strong backcheck pressure through the neutral zone, heavier, faster forecheck pace, and sort of making it easier for the defensemen who have struggled to break the puck out all year, especially when Quinn Hughes is off the ice. They, even with him injured, they were doing it more effectively, in large part because the forwards are coming back further, coming back quicker, and giving their defensemen more outlet. So it hasn't been pretty. I think the line I used the other day is an old Tom Cruise movie. It's not sexy, but it's got teeth when he came to some type of accounting and filing charges. That's how the Canucks are playing right now. I totally screwed up that movie reference. I apologize. So I'm going to have to look that up now. But it was a good line, and it applies to them. So to a blow in that lead and then get the 2 points, it takes a lot of pressure off now going into Anaheim, who I think is a little underrated in the role they could play in this race. They've been playing better hockey. They're not the easy out that they were for years, and they play Vancouver three more times before the end of the season, and then they're into Seattle. Getting Hughes back is a huge part of this, but the fact they've been able to sort of, you know, tread water without him, the trades have paid off. Again, the offense is not there. The margins are not there. These are all tight games. But the defensive play, the addition of Marcus Pettersson, allowing the rest of the defense to sort of settle into more appropriate spots in the rotation has been massive. And now it's just a matter of, is Quinn Hughes being back going to be enough to give them enough pop offensively to pull this off? But, you know, even with the losses in Utah and Vegas, as much as the sky was falling here in Vancouver, I didn't mind. I actually kind of like where their game is at and where it's trending, even if, like I said, it can be hard to watch on a lot of nights.
In this market, it feels like we're considering this to be a two-horse race with the Flames and Canucks. In Vancouver, is that a similar sentiment, or Utah being four back, St. Louis being five back, are you keeping tabs on what they're doing as well?
I'd be keeping tabs on what they're doing. Listen, like Utah, especially Utah, remember how hard they started and then Sean Durzi got hurt?
Yep.
Like, I think people slept on how big a loss that was, and he's now back. And still getting up to speed because he missed a lot of time, but I think he's underrated as a key component of that team. They've got so much offensive talent up front, and, you know, we saw it in Edmonton for years. We saw it in Vancouver this year. We talked a lot about it. You can have all the offensive talent you want up front amongst your forwards, but if you don't have people getting the puck on their stick in stride in transition, quite often it's all for naught. And Durzi's a guy who helps them do that in Utah. And their goaltending, like Connor Ingram obviously went through a lot earlier this season, but he's back. And Carl Vemelka has been one of the best in the league. So I think it would be foolish to count Utah out in particular. I would have counted St. Louis out, but there seems to be some real momentum built coming out of the Four Nations around Jordan Binnington and Colton Parayko winning that tournament, especially with Binnington. And so I still sort of, they're more of a side eye glance as opposed to right there in the rearview mirror. But I guess even though it was 6 years ago, they've done it before, you know, been that horse coming down the backstretch that catches everybody by surprise and goes on a run. So counting them out would probably be foolish. But Utah in particular, to me, there's just so much talent there. I really like Andre Tournier as a coach, and I think their goaltending's excellent. And again, I don't think it's a coincidence they had the start they had with Durzi, and now that he's back, I don't think they're out of this race at all.
Well, let's maybe wrap, Kev. It's Kevin Woodley from In Goal Magazine and NHL.com. Let's maybe wrap when you mentioned Jordan Binnington, and he was spectacular down the stretch in the gold medal game, which was now a week ago in Boston between Canada and the United States. And, you know, we talked Four Nations with you last week leading into the championship game, but we've got to get your thoughts on that performance from Binnington to help Canada win that game in overtime.
Well, obviously the spotlight will be on the overtime performance, and rightfully so. And I'm not even sure that all the saves are getting the credit they deserve. You know, the diving sort of glove save off to the side of the net on Brady was a big one. But obviously the backdoor save off Matthews, you know, getting off his post, transitioning across, pop passes from below and around the goal line into the middle were actually things statistically where he, you know, was a little bit underwater. And so to make that save in that moment on a play that he hasn't always handled that cleanly was so good. But then there was, and I think it was Matthews too, on a shot in the slot that actually deflected off a stick, and to stay with it patiently and stay visually attached and make a glove save and have to adjust to the deflection from that range. You know, that was big moment goaltending at its best, and probably a big part of why he was there. Again, we highlighted it going into it, right? Yes, this was a down season for Jordan Binnington. There's the numbers say what the numbers say. There's no way to argue it. But in the previous 5 years, he was the best Canadian goaltender in adjusted save percentage, only Canadian goaltender in the top 10 in the National Hockey League, and fully deserving. He showed you why. To me, the one thing, and, you know, full disclosure, I kind of had forgotten about this myself and probably should have highlighted it more as a reason to have him on that team going into it. But his ability to not just move the puck and handle the puck, and how key that was to disrupting an American forecheck that had the potential to overwhelm even the best defense in the world because of its size, because of its speed, and because of at times the ferocity of it. He was a game changer in that regard. And we saw the quick little plays, the patience with the puck, you know, I don't know if everybody realizes it, but sort of like the, you know, you shift the hips to one side, shoulders go the other way, the fakes that bought them time against the forecheck and helped them break out of their zone cleanly and maintain possession and get crisp, clean exits. Like, that was massive. But the harder one to quantify that I don't think you can sleep on is how many pucks he gets to behind the net that I just don't think anyone else does. Or it maybe not anyone else, but it's a real short list of guys who get back and stop those pucks. And the difference between a rim going around the boards and a defenseman having to pick it up off, you know, in stride, off the wall with a Brady Tkachuk bearing down, and being able to skate behind their own net ahead of that forecheck and skate out cleanly, like, that is night and day. And Jordan Binnington was such a massive part of that. It's really hard to quantify, but guys, like, it is a really short list of guys that get to that many pucks. He's such a great skater. His anticipation is excellent. It got so good to the point where I thought the Americans might waste one, you know, have the same guy dump three or four in and then fake it and shoot it on net to hope to catch him cheating. I think you saw even on the Tkachuk goal in that game that when you saw his body language sort of upset about the goal, I don't think it was the goal itself. I think it was the fact that he felt like he probably should have gotten to that one too. It started up on the glass, which is normally when you leave it, but settled along the boards halfway. And I think Binnington, you know, if you were to ask him, would probably tell you if I'd gone out and handled that puck, and I think I should have or could have. you know, that the play that results just is non-existent. And I think there were probably a lot of moments throughout the tournament, in that game in particular, where, you know, things would be very different if he wasn't so damn good handling that puck.
Just quickly, Kev, based on that performance of the Four Nations, is Binnington the incumbent for the Olympics next year?
Certainly, he's on the team, right? Like, he would have to fall off a cliff substantially over the next calendar year to not be a part of it. Incumbent, like, I do think there are other guys that will have a shot, right? Like, if Logan Thompson does what he has done this year through the end of it, goes on a playoff run, and starts next year the same way. And this is just because, like, the numbers are what they are. Like, he's playing at an Igor Shesterkin for Hart Trophy level. For all the slam dunk Hellebuck gets to Vezina talk this year, you can make a very strong case for Logan Thompson right now. And I know that might fall on deaf ears in Calgary, where the Flames just beat him 3-1, even though he's a Calgary native. But there are other guys who have a chance to rise up those ranks. And so the last thing I want to do is say, like, slam dunk, he's the starter. But I think he's at the very least earned the opportunity to have first dibs. And again, it goes beyond whatever numbers happen in the next year. It is that ability to sort of get out and stop a forecheck. It's how well he can fit in a system that way. It's the way he handled other teams' attempts to get under his skin. And then it's the ability to rise to the occasion like he did in overtime. You know, but at the same time, you know, maybe people look at it and they're like, hey, you know, that big diving glove save in overtime, maybe there's another goalie that plays deeper in his net that makes that save without having to fully extend and give it the glove over the pad, you know, in almost full splits. So I never want to sort of rule anyone else out, because I think there are a number of other guys that have sort of, ironically, for all the conversations about the demise of Canadian goaltending, there are other guys who will be deserving of that consideration, but he's probably earned first crack at it. That's for sure.
Okay. Great stuff as always, Kev. Appreciate the time. We'll do it again next week. Hey,
look forward to it, guys.
He is Kevin Woodley. He is our goaltending expert. He joins us every Thursday from In Goal Magazine and NHL.com. You always learn something when it's Kevin Woodley on the program. And today, no difference. Kevin Woodley joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, serving the best pizza, pasta, steaks, and ribs for over half a century. Dine in at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast or call 403-248-3344 for pickup or delivery.
Anything and everything Calgary Flames. It's all on Flames Talk. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
It is a Thursday, February 27th on Flames Talk. Steinberg Vickers along with you from our Groundworks downtown studio. So it's one down, five to go on this six-game road trip for the Flames. Started with a big win over the Caps Tuesday night, 3-1 over Washington. Snaps their home point streak at 16 games. And of all the teams on the trip, and we've been calling this a gauntlet, the mother of all trips, a monster road trip, whatever terms we've been using for this road trip, that was the team with the most points. That was the highest ranked team on this trip in Washington. And the Flames take a 3-1 victory there. We talked on Monday going into this trip about, Vix, what would make it a successful trip. I said 7 points, you know, above 500, 3 wins, and also overtime loss, something like that. What would make it a successful trip for you? What was the, or then, when we talked about this on Monday, what was the answer then?
Then for me, it was 500. So whether that's 3-3-0, whether that's 2-2-2, whatever it is, from a points perspective, you got to make sure you're coming away with half of the available points. I also had a little caveat of, as long as you're within 1 point of the Vancouver Canucks, who have a 5-game road trip over the same span. They've got Anaheim twice in there, Minnesota. A little bit less of a gauntlet, if you will, for the Canucks. If you could stay close to them, that was my other sort of wrinkle, that make sure that this road trip for the Flames doesn't have you falling too far back. Not that you can fall too far back over a 6-game stretch, but be right close and tight with Vancouver so that you're within striking distance on any given night was sort of the caveat. But from a points perspective, it was come away 500 and you'll be in good shape.
It's still like after the win over Washington, nothing changes. I'll still call it a successful road trip if they get 7 points out of it. And so far, they've got 2 of those 7 points. And so now they just got to go 2-2-1 the rest of the way to hit that mark. Has the mark of what a successful road trip looks like changed for you since the Washington win?
It has, and it was a significant win. It was against a team that is number one in the NHL, had an 8-game point streak overall, had a 16-game point streak at home fall because of the Flames, and in particular, that really impressive opening stanza for Calgary where they got up 2-0 and arguably their biggest win of the season at the end of the day, and we debated that on Flames Talk. Now, to me, I'm shifting it slightly, whereas that game's dead and gone. It's in the past. You bank those 2 points. I'm still going to maintain that 500 mark from here on out, knowing that you already have those two, but I'm discounting that game. So now it's a 5-gamer for me. If you can go 2-2-1 on that trip and then add on the 2 bonus points you add from Washington, now I'm up to where you were originally when you came up with your idea of, okay, come away with 7.
And 2-2-1 is not an unrealistic mark for them to hit here.
And again, I'm not disparaging Philadelphia, but you still have Philadelphia on this trip. Not a must win. We've talked a lot about the difference between must win and can't lose. For me on this road trip, that's one of those can't lose games. But you're still going up against some tough teams in the Tampa Bay Lightning, Florida Panthers, Carolina Hurricanes, Dallas Stars. You can come out of that stretch 500.
So now you're looking at 3-2-1 because they've
already banked that one. I was not necessarily counting on them winning that opener, so maybe I hedged a little bit in the sense that, okay, if they lose that first one, they can still have a reasonable path without trying to heighten expectations significantly on what they have to do. But now they've banked those. My expectation doesn't change. And in fact, if you look at that road, the road trip with that additional win in it, now I'm on par with you where if they can come away with 7, you should be very happy.
Well, and I don't think 2-2-1 is unrealistic. They played Florida really tight, and Florida will not
beat
have
Florida. Yeah.
They played them really tight. They beat them 3-0. One of their better wins of the season. The Panthers will not have Matthew Tkachuk on Saturday. So you're playing without one of their 2 or 3 most important players. So that's not out of the question. The Flames could go in and knock off the defending cup champs. There's a lot of motivation built into this game against Tampa Bay, knowing the Lightning rolled you up 8-3 last time. Second half of back-to-back in Carolina, that's not an easy spot. I think we'd take a look at Philadelphia and say, hey, that's one that you probably need to have if you're the Flames, because you'll have an edge on them and be ahead of them in the standings going into that game. I mean, Philadelphia at 59 points, the Flames at 64 points. It's not a massive... not a massive difference, but again, a winnable game for the Flames for sure. And then you try your luck at the end of a road trip against a very good Stars team, but the Flames have had some success at American Airlines Arena in recent years, so maybe you can go in there and have some success again. I don't think it's unrealistic for them to go 2-2-1. It's funny, going into the trip, and when we were doing our kind of trip preview on Monday, a lot of people were like, they get 2 points, it'll be a success. They're not, they win the Philly game, they're going to lose the rest. And there is a certain group of very cynical people that text in. I get that. And that's not a representation of what all Flames fans thought. But I do think there was a sense among some that, like, they're going to be lucky to go above 500. This trip might end their season, probably is going to end their season. And who knows? It still might. But I think 2-2-1 is quite realistic for the final 5, which would mean 3-2-1, you get your 7 points. And then, because I know that they went into this trip saying, hey, Steinberg said 7 points. Like, let's go and get the Steinberg
success. I heard that, actually.
I think that was what, they didn't show it on Sportsnet. They probably won't show it on The Chase, but I'm pretty sure that Huska in the room was like, boys, and played a clip of Flames Talk for everybody and was like, Steinberg said 7 points. We got to go get 7 points. You know, there's at least one person listening right now that thinks I'm being serious.
I hope it's not me. I'm not certain whether or not you're being... No, I'm just kidding. What's funny is I'm still going with this 500 mark. That's below their points percentage on the season. They're playing at a 561.
But you're grading on a curve,
but
right?
You are, because of the level of competition, the travel, the back-to-back, all of that. But still, like, what's acceptable to me is slightly under what you've been doing for 57 games this season. That's still the measure. That's still the mark. And to be perfectly honest, going into this road trip, if they went 5-1, I would be slightly surprised, but not like, oh my goodness, Dan Vladar starting against the Washington Capitals surprised. But if they also went 1-5, I could take a look at the schedule and go, yeah, I could see that scenario now too. So finding some nice middle ground going 2-2-1 the rest of the way, I feel like that the Calgary Flames coming back home would find themselves in a good spot, in a good position.
Terry in Sundance says, guys, why don't you shoot higher and go for 6-0?
We'll leave that to the Flames themselves to do that.
We're allowed to like be realistic on both sides. Would 6-0 be awesome? Yes. I think that we'd all be very, very impressed if they won the next five on this trip and came back with a 6-0 road trip. We would be celebrating that as a potential season making trip.
Yep. But
they have the doors wide open. The door is not closed. It is wide open for a 6-0 trip.
Let me ask you this.
I'm trying to be a little realistic about it.
Let me ask you this, because you're a steel trap up top.
Uh-huh.
When's the last time the Flames swept a road trip of six or more games?
That I don't know, but I believe...
And I'm not actually expecting you to, but...
I believe they swept one in, I want to say, like 2008. They swept one at around this time. It was after the trade deadline. But they swept a trip after the deadline. And I think it was five games, maybe, in 07-08. And I think it was spring 08 is when they did.
I was tongue-cheeking that.
I don't know if that is the last time, but that's the first one that comes to my mind. And now, well,
anyways, long story short is sweeping six-game road trips is not a common theme, A, for the Flames, B, for any team in the NHL. It's not realistic. Even going back to Monday, going Wednesday, even after having won the first game against Washington, going, yeah, you know what? I think a fair expectation for this Flames group is to come away with 12 of a possible 12 points. I don't feel like that. You're setting yourself up for disappointment.
I'm just going and looking at what it would correspond to. So maybe it was 09, or the 08-09 season. I believe it happened after the Olli Jokinen trade, but I might be wrong on that. I'm just going and looking. I don't know. It happened at some point in the late 2000s. I'm pretty sure they swept like a 4 or 5 game trip out east, and they took all five. But
I'm pretty impressed with you on that. I'm not gonna lie.
I'll find it later. Couple of other things to touch on. Congratulations to Blake Coleman. And these round numbers are always fun to talk about. But I think with Coleman, for him to hit 600, I think he's going to play his 600th game on Thursday night in Tampa Bay. His former team, the team that he has had the most success with in terms of accolades. He won 2 Stanley Cups, a member of the Tampa Bay Lightning. He'll play 600 games on Thursday in Tampa Bay. When it's all said and done, 299 of his games will be spent as a member of the Flames. So almost half of his NHL career has been spent now in Calgary. And so that is more than his time in Tampa Bay, more than his time in New Jersey. Calgary has been the place that he has spent the majority of his career. And almost half of his 600 games will be spent as a member of the Flames. So congratulations to Blake Coleman on hitting number 600. He spoke about it a little bit on Thursday in Tampa Bay.
It's cool. It's obviously one that I had circled on the calendar, and kind of fluky with, you know, the LA game being canceled. That's kind of how we ended up here. So, but yeah, it's cool. It's always fun to come back here, and a lot of good memories and a short time being here. And you know, the 600 game thing is just another little bit of reflection, and it's nice to have a little family here as well to share it with.
Yeah, and I'd imagine just that being part of it, because you know, it's not often, given how the schedule in the NHL works, you know, that you can take some time to reflect, but it's kind of give you the opportunity to maybe think about that a little bit.
Yeah, that's what it does. I think anytime you hit kind of those full round numbers, you just kind of take a step back and just kind of remember where you are and who all got you there, and just kind of relive the ride a little bit. So took some time last night to talk about it and reminisce on some stuff. And then ultimately today, I just want to get the 2 points and have reason to celebrate.
Text comes in, says, that's crazy, because no matter what, when I think of Coleman, I automatically think about him as a member of the Lightning. And it was a little surprising to me, too, because I went, I'm like, oh, let's just go, because I wanted to do it for my prep, like how many games he's played as a member of the Flames. So Thursday night will be game number 299 as a member of the Flames, which means on Saturday he'll play his 300th game. And so as he hits game 600, almost half of his time as a member of the Flames. And you start to think about it, you're like, okay, well, that actually makes sense. Like, he's almost done his fourth season as a member of the Flames. And boy, he's been a hell of a player. He has been, I'm trying to think of free agent signings that would be in the last, say, 10, 15 years that would be in the same category as Blake in terms of they got exactly what they signed him for. Like, they signed Blake Coleman for certain attributes, and he has provided those attributes almost to a T the entire time now in season number 4. I would point to a few. I think for a good chunk of his time, Derek Ryan did that. I think for a good chunk of his time, Michael Frolik did
that. Was the one that I had in mind, yeah.
And the other one that I think is right up there with Coleman in terms of like free agent signings that just hit the mark the entire way, Chris Tanev. Tanev and Coleman, I think, go down as Brad Treliving's best UFA signings.
Yeah, I don't think you'll
followed by James Neal.
What?
Womp womp.
You rattled me there. Yeah, you're not wrong. Like Tanev, Coleman. I mean,
James Neal point was a joke, by the way, just so anybody.
There were probably a few swings and misses, more so than home runs. But yeah, I would put Coleman and Tanev in that home run category where you identified a player, you hoped you knew exactly what you were going to get. They show up and they delivered exactly to expectation.
He's been a leader. He's been an instant fit on Michael Backlund's wing, and they have played almost exclusively together throughout their time.
He's only missed 5 games in his Calgary Flames tenure total.
He's popped a 30-goal season. He has been an incredibly useful two-way guy. He has been an elite penalty killer. Good for him, man. Like I really, and Coleman took a less conventional path to being an NHLer. He was a later bloomer. He got to the NHL later. He spent a lot of time in the American League. And when they signed him, he was a guy that was approaching 30. And so, like, the fact that he's hitting 600 well over 30, it shows you two things. Number one, it shows you that he did take a little bit longer to crest the NHL. But also, number two, Vix, it also gives you a pretty good idea that there might be a little bit more gas in the tank for Coleman at his age compared to other NHLers, you know, in the 33, 34 age range.
Well, yeah, it's not like he's sitting at 1,000 games of wear and tear at the NHL level. He spent all 4 years in college and they play a much lighter schedule. And again, he's managed to be durable in his time in the NHL. So it's not as though you're looking at a player that has chronic issues with a shoulder or a knee or an ankle or anything like that. Full marks to Blake Coleman for, one, getting to the 600 mark, because that's not an easy... Everybody looks at 1,000 games is like, wow, that's... Playing more than 300 games,
man,
is incredible.
Playing one is...
playing one is still
about,
eludes me.
As a hockey player, you've got about like a 0.01% chance of playing one in the NHL.
So you're saying there's a chance.
I think that ours is down to zero. I don't think that the door is open anymore.
Well, that I'm going to need a couple minutes to process that. I don't know what to do.
Sorry for I don't like to speak in absolutes.
It's a good thing we don't have a couple name because that
but
would
Shan's
just...
not going to the NBA either. Like, that's a 0%. Shan's not going to the NBA either.
What? Whoa! I want you to go on the record right now. Who has a greater chance of playing pro in their
Shan?
Didn't even finish the question.
Theo writes, the fact Coleman sitting at almost 300 with the Flames before the end of his fourth season speaks to his durability too, just shows up to work. And I agree. The guy's been nothing but a worker And that's what he's been his entire career.
He's gone 81, 82, 78, and he's on pace right now to play 82. He's played in all 57 games this season for Calgary. Like, that is the mark of durability.
Matt and Cochran gave me the Greta Thunberg, whatever the...
Yeah. I know who...
Greta Thunberg, that's her name. Cracking jokes about the real deal? How dare you? It's fair. I'm sorry. That is still a sensitive subject. Francesca asks if either of us shoot right. I do shoot right, but I'm still at 0%.
I shoot left, but play right wing if that matters.
It doesn't.
I gave up playing center because it's too much skating.
Markstrom kind of fits the category as well. Almost won the Vezina, also returned ball. Yeah, I'd put Markstrom as a pretty good side. Like, I would put Coleman and Tanev in a range of their own as the two best UFA signings. And then I'd put Markstrom, Frolik, Derek Ryan in the next group because I think they all gave the Flames what they were looking for as well in their tenures. You know, Markstrom didn't play out the full 6x6, played 2/3 of it. Derek Ryan played the whole way through. Frolik got traded.
Where are you on
the end.
Gudbranson in England? Because you signed them for very specific purposes. And I
Gudbranson
think
only played 1 year. Yeah. But was fine in his 1 year and cashed in big. And Engelin did his job pretty darn well.
See, I'd put those in the Derek Ryan more category to a degree just because the expectation on those signings are a little lower, I think it's fair to say.
That's probably fair. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. And by the way, I was right. It was the 07-08 season. I nailed it, baby. I was just a little off on my time in 07-08. So I thought it was spring of 08. It was before that. It was winter of 07. So it was the 07-08 campaign, and the Flames took 6 straight on the road. They went out on the road, took wins in Chicago, Florida, Tampa Bay, Carolina, St. Louis, and then wrapped in Columbus before Christmas. So 6 on the road, 6 straight. They swept that road trip, which was the first time since, I want to say, the mid-90s, since the Flames, because at the time, I remember I was working at 660 News. I was doing a little fill-in shift over there, and I did what we call a voicer on it. And I remember vividly being in the old building and saying that it's the first time the Flames had swept a road trip of 6 or more since Rick Tabarachi was a goaltender for the Flames. So I think it was the mid-90s since the last time they'd done that.
Who is this guy? Like, my goodness. I don't remember the scores from last week.
I can't remember anything important, so... You take the good with the bad.
Fair enough. Just wanted to mention the names, the teams that you highlighted on that 07-08. There's a few crossover references. Yeah. Maybe it's time.
Yep.
Maybe it's time. Every 18 years, you're due.
And there is the inevitable Coleman criticism text because people
for what?
People aren't allowed to celebrate good things without somebody taking them down a notch. Yeah. I won't read the text. I'm just rolling my eyes at it. Can you let the guy enjoy his 600th game?
Too good of a leader. Plays his
too
role
nice
to
of a guy.
Too much. Too good a head of hair. Like, come on. What
are
we talking
jealous
about
here? Steinberg, Vickers, Flames Talk. It's Shan Virgie, Cam Hughes, our outstanding producers this hour. This hour, the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockAndSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution.